I just got done looking at a DVD of Lloyd Pye about hominoids. 20 million years, he says, of suppressed history. This was incredible. We'll talk about this and a number of other subjects in a moment with our very special guest tonight, Lloyd Pye, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd Pye graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology. He joined the U.S. Army and became an agent for military intelligence. During this time, Mr. Pye began an independent study of human evolution at age 30. His studies led him to conclude humans could not have possibly have evolved on Earth according to the Darwinian paradigm. By age 40, he could illustrate his belief by comparing skeletons in the so-called pre-human fossil record with those reported to belong to the world's four basic types of hominoids. Lloyd is probably best known in alternative circles as the caretaker of the famous Star Child skull. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. The complete bone cranium that looks like a hybrid between a human and some other kind of alien being. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello, Lloyd. How are you?
Well, George, I'm doing fine, and thank you very much for having me on again. I always appreciate it.
Well, I got done looking at your presentation that you had in Billingham, Washington, and it was absolutely stunning. You did a phenomenal job on it, so much so I'm glad you're on the program. Just so part of the show, we can talk about the work you've been doing into Sasquatch research.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I really would urge anyone to take a look at that. That's not money in my pocket. It's from someone else, but I thought they did a very good job with it myself.
Okay, let's get an update, if we can, on the Star Child Project. And for those people who are brand new to the show, very briefly, tell us what the Star Child is all about.
The Star Child is a skull, as you said earlier, that's a real, true bone skull, no question about it, that looks, you know, it has the outline and configuration of a human, but it's very, very different in a number of ways. The bone itself is half the weight it should be. It's half the thickness that it should be. It's two or three times as durable, as hard as it should be, and it has the morphology of something that's not entirely human. The eye sockets are different. The neck positioning is different. The way the cheeks are aligned, the just everything about it, every part of it is different. It has no internal sinuses. The brain that's inside that head is much larger than it should be. We can't account for all the brain that goes in there. It's just an amazing thing, and there's so many things odd about it. It goes way beyond what you would expect from a standard deformity of any kind into something that's not entirely human, and that's what we've been trying to establish.
You've had some DNA testing, the results?
Right. The DNA testing that we've had done so far, there were two skulls found together, one that was clearly human and this one that is apparently not. And when the DNA testing was done, the human, there are two kinds of DNA that you can recover. There's mitochondrial and there's nuclear DNA. The mitochondrial DNA is fairly easy to recover. It comes down from strictly the mother. The nuclear DNA comes out of the nucleus of the cells, and it's from both parents. With the human, very easy to recover both the mitochondrial and the nuclear. But with the Star Child, we got the mitochondrial easy enough. That's the mother's DNA. But when we went after the nuclear DNA, mother and father, suddenly the primers wouldn't work. They wouldn't pick it up. The geneticists say, well, maybe there's some kind of highly unusual degradation. And the other obvious answer is the primers that they're using, which are designed strictly for human DNA, can't find what they're looking for. So that's where we are right now, and it's going to require the creation of new primers that might be able to find, you know, the DNA, whatever it is. And basically, we'd have to build our own ladder of primers that would recover it, and we'd be able to compare the new primers with the standard human primers to see what the differences are. Very expensive process, but we're hoping someday to get the money to do that, and then we'll know for sure what it is.
You are opening up the Star Child Project website, and you're asking anyone to take a shot at drawing what the Star Child might have looked like in life, aren't you?
Exactly. What we've done, we've done a complete revamp of the Star Child website. There were two Star Child websites, the original one and the one that was created when I spent last year in England doing the sophisticated testing that we were having done there, and which is available, the results of that's available on the website. But the two websites have now been blended into one, and we're asking anyone that has artistic abilities, or if you know somebody that has artistic abilities that might be interested in trying to put a face on the skull, we will post those images if they're halfway reasonable. I mean, we don't want joke things and cartoon things, but you know, if they make a serious attempt at it, we will post them and, you know, see what people come up with. It should be very exciting and a lot of fun for those who have those abilities and those interests.
Lloyd, tonight lots of new information, and I want to talk about so many different things with you, including intelligent design, of course, the continual search for Bigfoot, Sasquatch. You've got some pretty novel ideas on how to find this creature that I want to talk to. You'll also make five predictions, which I find fascinating. And, of course, the theories of Zachariah Sitchin cannot escape you, my friend, when we talk tonight. What have you been doing in the arena of the search for Bigfoot? Because, you know, this has been an important aspect of your career.
Right. Well, that's how I started out. I started out with hominoid research when I was a senior in college, and that was when I first stuck my toe in the water of this, and I was very impressed by it. And then later, I was able to see the Minnesota Iceman when it was frozen in its block of ice and was taken around the country. I was convinced that was real too, and so I followed up that field, and it showed me that we could not have evolved here. That hominoids represented what we are told are our anthropological ancestors, the prehumans. Those beings, the prehumans, the Australopithecines and the early Homos, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, and Neanderthals, those are not human. Those are ancestors of, or the ancestors of today's living hominoids. So if those belong to the hominoids, we don't fit here, but I didn't know where we fit. And that's, I just waited. I couldn't find an answer until I found the work of Zachariah Sitchin, and suddenly I had an answer. And so I knew that I could blend his work with my work and come up with something new and original and I think important, and that's what I've done.
Now, it's interesting and it's also fascinating that some of these hominoids haven't really changed over the tens of millions of years, yet human beings all of a sudden popped up on this planet. How do you explain the difference, Lloyd?
Well, it's very simple. The hominoids are the indigenous upright walking primates of planet Earth. They belong here, and they go all the way back in time through the Miocene era. There were a group of apes called Miocene apes. Now, that we're talking apes. We're talking no tails, monkeys, like monkeys. And the apes dominated the monkeys. There were so many more of them, 50 different types around the world, maybe more. So these apes dominated from 20 million years ago to around 5 million years ago. And then suddenly something happens and only four are left, the ones that we have now, gorillas and chimps and gibbons and orangutans. And so where'd the others go? What happened to them? And furthermore, could they all have been quadrupedal? There are a group of Miocene apes that are called the short-armed apes, and it's the short-arm problem. And the short-arm problem is if you don't have arms longer than your legs, you can't locomote comfortably on all fours. You can't be a quadruped. And yet there were apes that had arms equal to the length of their legs, and they are called the short-armed Miocene apes. And it is assumed that they walked in a kind of a funny squatting, shambling kind of walk with their knuckles dragging on the ground. And this is insane. Why would they do that when all they'd have to do is just stand upright and they can walk on 2 feet? So I think it's very clear that the short-armed apes were, in fact, bipeds going back as much as 20 million years ago, and it's them that have walked out of the Miocene and become the prehumans of antiquity as far as our fossil record goes, and that they continue around the world today, every continent except Antarctica, living their lives in half the world, fully half the world, is terra incognita. Most people are not aware of that, but fully half of the world, as we all live in it today, belongs to us, but half of it, we hardly go into at all, and that belongs to them, and that's where they live.
Lloyd, in your presentation, you showed the various steps of the hominoids through the Neanderthals to Cro-Magnon and then man. In your opinion, one, does Bigfoot exist? And I know what that answer is going to be, but I want to hear it from you again. And then after you answer it, where would you put Sasquatch in that category?
Well, Bigfoot and there are four basic kinds. Excuse me, George. There are four basic kinds based on height. There are the giant kind, the 8 to 10 foot tall, and that is Bigfoot and Sasquatch. Then you have a man-sized kind, and you have two of those. They're in the 5 to 7 foot range, weigh maybe 600 pounds. And that is the abominable snowman type, and another type that are called the Almas because they dominate in Russia.
Almas?
The Almas. Then you have another kind, which are the pygmy kind, and they are the Sedapa, the Agagwe, and you remember the hobbits of a few months ago found in Indonesia?
Yes, the three-footers.
Exactly, and they on 60 Minutes, the guys did the interview, and he said outright, well, yes, technically there's nothing about them that are human except they walk upright, and so they have to be some kind of antiquated human type of being. When all they have going for them that's human-like is upright posture. Everything else about them, not a bone in their body, is human. Well, that's the way it is with all of the pre-humans up through Neanderthal. So Bigfoot Sasquatch is just Gigantopithecus, which is one of the Miocene apes, come down to present time. And the Almas and the Abominable Snowman are two different kind. Understand that. They're not alike at all. The Abominable Snowman are very primitive types, and they live only in the Himalayas, and they have very unusual feet that are designed for living on not flat land. They don't walk quite the way we do, or the way bipeds do. But the Almas are very human-like. In fact, they may be the most human-like. And then the Agagwes are just small. They're around 4 feet tall, 3 to 4 feet tall, like the Hobbit, like the Sedapa, like the Agagwes. Did I say? Yeah, the Agagwes. You have four different size categories around the world. They exist on all continents, are found on all continents except Antarctica. And eventually, probably sooner, more likely than later now, because of the technology that's getting out into the field, one of them is going to be captured or killed. One of them is going to get hit by a Mack truck somewhere. It's going to happen again. It's happened in the past with the Minnesota Iceman. It'll happen again. And eventually, science is going to have to confront that reality.
What do you think science will do when just one is found?
Well, I think, George, if I was in their shoes, I would try to do what they did with the Hobbit. It's just a freak of nature. You know, immediately they
until they found a family, then they found a family of them, right?
Exactly. But the first reaction was, oh, it's just a freak. It couldn't be that it's anything other than just some kind of a freak. And that was the original argument until they went out and found some more. Exactly. So now they're having to accept that they're some kind of, you know, quote, ancient human. But when the first hominoid is brought in, that will be the same tactic. It's just some kind of weird freak of nature. It'll be the second one that'll nail it down. But what the first one will do is it will put search teams out there very seriously looking for them because the reward is going to be, you know, so big. And when the second one comes in, they're really not going to have a leg to stand on. Science is going to have to change its position in a number of fields across a number of the things that we all believe and accept now. And it's just going to change a lot of things. It's going to change our day-to-day reality.
I think so, too. If you had unlimited funding, Lloyd, and you were able to put together the team to truly find Sasquatch, what would you do? How would you do it?
Well, it would really be actually pretty easy. You could get three or four of the real good helicopters that we have available to now. Maybe, if possible, rent some of the Blackhawks from the military, although I know they're using them mostly in Iraq now. But that's really, you would need just some very good helicopters, muffle the engines down very quietly, which they're capable of doing. All this technology is available today.
That's
some
true.
Of that really, really good night vision, heat-seeking equipment that they have, and just, we know the areas where they live. We know the, where they can be found, and just cruise the area the way they found Che Guevara all the way back into the 60s. You'll look down, you find the heat signature that looks like what you think, you know, it ought to look like, and then you drop a team down, you rope them down of like commandos.
So immediately, if they see what could be a family or perhaps one, what you're saying is this team is in the helicopter, and they go down right away.
Exactly. They just drop down and surround it and work their way up. That's how they got Che Guevara back then. They didn't. They couldn't do heat signatures the way they can do now for bodies, but they could do fires. And they knew the general area in Bolivia where he was, so they used the U-2 to scan for fires out in the wilderness. And they, when they did that, they found what they thought was the most likely one, a cluster of campfires, sent the military in to surround them, walked up the hill that they were on, and tightened the noose, and they got him. And it's the same simple technique. It would work on hominoids as well.
This team that you would send down, how many people? Would they be armed? What would their mission be? How would they accomplish this?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. If I was in charge and you asked me, I would send them in with weapons, and I would send them in with the intention of getting a body, because science is not going to tolerate much else. If you go in just to shoot film of it, they'll say somehow it was doctored. If you go in with darts, you don't really know how much juice to put into one to stop it, and if you miss, it's going to come get you. So for the protection of the people that you'd be sending in, and these are not endangered species either, so it isn't like you would be killing the last one, but if you're going in to get one to prove that they exist, I think you actually have to get one.
My gosh,
make sure that you get it.
I never thought you'd say that, Lloyd. Would you try to capture it first?
Well, I don't see how to do that look, we talk about this in the community of hominoid research all the time, George. It isn't like we all haven't thought about it. And listen, I will tell you personally, I have not hunted, fished, or killed an animal since I was like 12 years old. I had no stomach for it personally. So that isn't my thing. But if we're going to talk about this in a rational way, if I were to send down a team of 5 or 6 or 10 guys, and they're going up to get a Bigfoot or a family, and they generally tend to go in groups.
And this would be an 8 to 10 footer we're talking about?
Yeah, this would be the big one, because that's what dominates here in this country. We have the other kind, and we may get, what if we got a juvenile? Like, excuse me, the Minnesota Iceman was a juvenile, but you can't always count on that. These things are powerful, they're fast, and while we own the night when we have our goggles on and all that, they own the night too. They have night vision ability. So it would pretty much be a fair fight. And if we were to shoot them with darts and miss or not get the right amount to stop them in their tracks, how would we know? Do you use the same amount for an elephant, for a water buffalo, for a giraffe? We don't know. And if you make a mistake, they could get to your guy and tear his head off like pulling the cherry off the top of a soda before you know it. That's how strong they are. To me, I would not risk that.
When we come back, let's talk about some of your 5 predictions, also chat about intelligent design, and get into some of the thoughts of Zechariah Sitchin as well. There's lots to talk about tonight. Lloyd Pye. His book, by the way, is called Everything You Need to Know Is Wrong. We'll talk about his website, too. He's changing his main website. We'll tell you about that in a moment. And our guest tonight is Lloyd Pye, and we'll be back with Mr. Pye in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Lloyd Pye, our guest. Lloyd, you have five predictions, sort of, and let's go through them all if we can, and then we'll come back and elaborate on them.
Well, first, let me say that I hope this is a better sounding reception from the phone.
Oh, you sound great now. Yes.
I would like to explain to everybody, I went out and bought a headset today for the first time. I normally do it the way I'm doing it now, just holding the receiver in my hand, but I thought I'd get into the 21st century, but it didn't work so well, so I apologize for that. But
go get a refund,
do it this way through. Now, as far as the five predictions that are in the DVD that you saw, these, I think, can be really, really important because I think, as far as I know, this is the first time anybody's put them out in a public way. But what I say is, this: number one, the so-called prehumans are non-extinct Miocene apes. Apart from their bipedality, they share no basic characteristics with humans. None. And this is what we talked about a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the so-called prehuman stride is nothing like a modern human. They are so far apart in foot morphology and locomotive style, no reasonable comparison can or should be made. And in the DVD, I go over a lot of foot evidence, as you saw, to prove why I'm sure that's going to be true. Number three, hominoids are planet Earth's only indigenous bipedal primates. They have lived for millions of years on every continent except Antarctica. And most people are not aware of the Miocene ape history for specifically that reason. They can't be explained, so they're talked about very little by mainstream science. Number four, the fossil record from Neanderthals back through the Australopithecines contains nothing resembling a human. They are the bones of hominoids, which will prove to be apes that walked out of the Miocene era. And again, it all ties in with what we've been talking about earlier. And number five, humans are not native to planet Earth. And this is, of course, the most explosive. Along with domesticated plants and animals, we have been genetically engineered by outside intervention for unknown purposes. And, of course, that's the big one, but I'm very, very confident that that's, in the end, what is ultimately going to be determined.
Do you think Bigfoot is or was an intelligent creature?
I think they're intelligent in the way that monkeys, chimps, gorillas, like that. They can't communicate in the way that we can. They don't have the throat mechanism that we have for speaking. They can make sounds like all apes can, loud sounds, but they don't have the capacity for breaking those sounds into small little tiny parts the way we do to modulate into speech. So I think that that's a function of very high intelligence. I don't think they have that, but they are masters, absolute masters of their environment, and that's why it's so difficult for us to just go out and bring one back. They know their terrain a heck of a lot better than we do. And when we go out there, they see us, hear us, smell us much, much before we hear, see, and smell them.
How old do you think the species are? And I know we talked about the four different ones, but generally the giant ones, the ones that we see in this country primarily.
Well, you mean how old they are in a lifespan?
Well, no, not in a lifespan, but as a species. I mean,
I think they all go back to the Miocene, George, going back 20 million years. The Miocene runs from about 25 million years ago to about 5 million years ago. And I think that from in the beginning of the Miocene, at around 20 million years ago, the apes totally dominate the monkeys. There are so many more apes than there are monkeys at that point. And then suddenly something, quote, happens to all the apes and they go away. Did they really? I don't think they did. There was not any kind of a catastrophic event that would have taken them out. So I think they just live on in the parts of the world that we simply don't inhabit. We think we inhabit almost every cubic foot out there. We've either been there or lived there. None of that's true. It's just not true. There are vast areas of land that probably not a human foot's ever been on. Or if it has, it's maybe one time in 100 years. Those are the kinds of places in deep forests, jungles, swamps. That's the kind of areas that they live in.
Look, if we can get illegal aliens to come across the border and we not know where they are or see them, I'm sure there are a number of Sasquatches all over this planet and we can't find them either.
Exactly. There's plenty of room for them to roam. They stick pretty much to their own terrain. And the only time we see them generally is when we dip into one of the borders where they live, or they dip into one of the borders where we live. But only at those border lines do you have the sightings. We rarely cross through deep into the heart of their territory. They don't generally come deep into the heart of our territory.
Lloyd, why haven't they evolved then over 20 million years? I mean, I would assume they're the same as they were then.
That's right. I don't really think that there is evolution, George. I think evolution, as it's been spun out by the evolution advocates, is just not true. It just doesn't happen. There's no sign of it in the fossil record. There's absolutely no sign of, you know, one species developing into some higher form of the same species.
So it is what it is. It stays the way it is.
Pretty much. It's what's called stasis. What the fossil record shows is something called stasis, where something appears. Everything appears. Everybody needs to understand this. In the fossil record, everything just appears. You have strata without these things, whatever they are, and then suddenly there's strata with them, and they come fully formed. There's no evolution ever apparent anywhere. So once they're here, they can change a little bit in what's called microevolution. So you do get some of that. You get the Darwin's finches, you get the changes in the beaks, you get the changes in the tortoise shells. You get changes once they come in parts of their bodies to better adapt them to their environments. But you don't get a finch changing into a sparrow. You don't get a tortoise changing into a rhino or something. You just don't get that. You don't get any kind of movement like that. So that being the case, I don't think there's been any evolution here ever, and I don't think there's going to be. It looks, if you just go by the fossil record, that the whole of the Earth has been terraformed since the very beginning, is being terraformed now, and will probably continue to be terraformed on into the future by somebody else who has an agenda that we can only guess at.
Well, let's concentrate on that for a while, Lloyd, because that to me is just historical. You are, of course, familiar with the work of Zachariah Sitchin. Give me your thoughts on some of the things he has done. Do you think he is right on with his evaluation of the Sumerian tablets?
Well, he's on to something. He may not be right in every single thing that he says, because he's one guy working with a huge field of knowledge that nobody else really wants to touch because it's so volatile. So I'm not saying that he's perfect and no one should expect him to be, but I think he's closer to the truth than anybody else out there in terms of what the ancient history of human beings was at the time that he studies, which is around 4,000 to 6,000 years ago, the ancient Sumerians. That area that he focuses on, I think he's closer to the truth there than anybody, any certainly mainstream Sumerologist, because they have to work what they find and what they think around the accepted agenda. And Zechariah just simply ignores all that, and he goes with what logic dictates, what the language dictates, and while it's very revolutionary, it makes sense, because what he doesn't talk about, like the genetics, for example, are the things that I talk about, are the hominoids. He doesn't talk about any of that. That's why I said earlier, what I saw in his work was that I could take what I was doing, which had a huge gaping hole in it, and I could plug his information in and have a whole picture. And by taking, if you take what I do and plug it in same way, reverse with him, you get the same thing. It strengthens what he talks about, particularly the genetics. Now, we all are aware that there are breakthroughs in genetics all the time, all of which are indicating that what he says, what Zechariah Sitchin says about it, and what I say about it too for that matter, is true, that we are a genetically engineered species. We just came up in September with the revelation of the chimp genome, and so we're able to compare that now to the human genome. Now, that's our closest genetic relative. Everything we have, they ought to have. If we came from them, it should be pretty close, 98-99% the same, right? Except we have whole chunks of our genome that are completely original, found nowhere in any other primate, any other animal, any other species. So how do those things get there? It didn't happen naturally. Those things have to be put there. And so as the evidence keeps coming in, it becomes clearer and clearer, and one day or other there's going to be a tipping point that we did not evolve on planet Earth, that human beings are an add-on here, that we're a genetically engineered species, and for as volatile as that is to talk about and think about and contemplate, it is the truth, and it is going to have to be dealt with at some point.
Science does know that the Neanderthals and the modern humans walked this planet at the same time. Now, in my day, Lloyd, when I was in school, nobody would have talked about that. That would have been unheard of. You know, according to the evolutionary twist, it would have been a smooth transition. Right. Now we know that modern human beings were there with these cave people. And how do you explain that?
Well, because they're hominoids. Number one, Neanderthals are living hominoids. So it's no different than it was at any point prior to that. What happened is science had to have a smooth transition from beginning to end. And it was, you have this weird-looking thing, a Neanderthal, and then you have this modern-looking thing, a Cro-Magnon. One had to somehow have led into the other. The fact that they seemed to do it overnight at around 30,000 years ago, science just shrugged. Well, you know, magic happens. It happened. That's the way it is. We have Neanderthal bones, and then suddenly we have Cro-Magnon bones, and the Cro-Magnon somehow evolved. This is what you and I were taught when we were young. Well, now we know, of course, that that's just ridiculous, that there was about a 200,000-year overlap between us and them, so that we were all living at the same time on the Earth. And now the saying is, well, we somehow wiped them out. Well, why did we have to wipe them out? Why couldn't they have just gone where we couldn't get at them? Why didn't we just take a certain part of the land of the Earth, and they took another part of the land of the Earth, and everybody's continuing on living happily ever after? I think that's what happened.
And you know that when this genetic altering occurred, let me ask you this, Lloyd. Did the human beings that we know of, the way we are now, did we come down directly from other planets, maybe Mars, who knows where, or were we already on this planet and then we were altered from maybe Neanderthals or Cro-Magnon?
I think probably the latter, George. I think that you need to have a certain amount of the DNA of the place that's developed over time. You know, you put something here and you let it adapt to the environment. I think they probably took Neanderthals, whoever did it, and put a lot of their own DNA in to make the significant changes that they wanted to create us.
Okay.
But that we still have a small part of the Neanderthals in us, 5%, 10%, I don't know. But in order for us to be as well adapted as we are to the planet, that would be required, keeping in mind that we're really not very well adapted to this planet. Our skin isn't well adapted to the amount of sunlight that hits here. We're not well adapted to the amount of gravity here. We wouldn't have hemorrhoids and varicose veins and the things that we have if that were true. So we're not particularly well adapted, but we're adapted well enough to live here and to live a life out here and to be the slaves and the servants that we were apparently designed to be. But when you talk about the creation of us as a genetically engineered species, keep in mind that the evidence for this is blindingly clear to anybody that will look at it, because the primates that we supposedly descend from genetically, they all have 48 chromosomes. We have 46 chromosomes. How did we drop two whole chromosomes and become that much more sophisticated? Well, guess what? We didn't. Somebody, somehow, some way, took our second and third primate chromosomes, fused them together so that they take up only one space, and turned them into a single chromosome.
Why?
Now, nature supposedly can do that. That's garbage. Nature can't do that. That has to be done in a genetics lab. But, you know, to say that, if science says that, the ball game's over. So they have to say, well, yeah, nature can do that. Nature can't do that. You can't take two chromosomes and splice them together beautifully and make one that works. Nature's not going to be able to.
And there would be no earth change event. There would be no earthly thing that would do that as well.
Right, exactly that. Furthermore, we have over 4,000 genetic disorders in our genome. Now, if we were a natural species, you can have genetic disorders that go through the gene pool, albinism, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get 4,000 plus. We've got so many more than anybody else, except for domesticated plants and animals. They have it too. They were engineered as well. I firmly believe that what happened was a group of super beings came here to the earth, and in order to turn the place into something that they could live in and enjoy and be halfway comfortable, they needed, number one, slaves and servants, but they also needed food. And so they created the domesticated animals and the domesticated plants that we have, because all of those seem to come out of nowhere at about the same time, around 10,000 years ago. Domesticated plants, domesticated animals. And if you look at the writings of the Sumerians, which Zechariah Sitchin has found, it says that all this was done by the gods to, quote, give the gods their ease in order to make life easy for them here. And I believe that. It makes sense. It's what the genetic record indicates. And I think that over time that's going to be recognized as the exact truth of what happened.
Do you think these beings, these extraterrestrials, look like we do now or totally different?
No, I think they look very much like we do now. You know, they said in the writings of the Sumerians, we shall make the Adamu, A-D-A-M-U, they called us Adamu plural, the Adamu in our own image, after our own likeness. Now, those who wrote the Bible took that very language from the Sumerians and just copied it down word for word into the Bible, except they took the U off the Adamu and made it Adam, but otherwise it's the same wording that the Sumerians wrote 2,000 years earlier in the Bible. And, you know, I think that's exactly what they did. They made us to look like them, to be like them, but to be better adapted to this planet than they were.
It's remarkable when this all occurred. Perhaps this is a group of beings that go from planet to planet, jump-starting planets, Lloyd.
It could be. It could well be that, because whoever's been doing it has been, at least as far as Earth goes, they've been doing it for like 5 billion years, because it's pretty clear that the first form of life on Earth, the prokaryotic bacteria, was put here just as soon as the Earth could tolerate anything. I mean, it was a seething ball of magma around 5 billion years ago, and yet, whammo, there you have prokaryotic bacteria. Not one kind, but two kinds. And it looks as if the planet got turned into a place that higher life could live. So if indeed that's true, whoever is doing this has the ability to take an incredibly long view. Time must mean nothing to them, whoever or whatever they are.
When we come back, let's talk about the name Damon Elkin, okay?
Okay.
We'll do that and talk about much more. Lloyd, by the way, at one point lived in New Orleans. There's a reason we're going to talk with him about that as well, beyond what has happened with the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd's website, of course, is lloydpye.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com.